Doctors Today. The latest developments in the world of medicine. Do you believe in the golden rule? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. How much of your time would you give to help save the life of a person you don't even know? A minute? 10 minutes? Or even a half hour? If your answer is a half hour, here's your opportunity. It's knocking at your heart.
The American Medical Association, in cooperation with the National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations, presents Doctors Today, a weekly report on the progress of science and medicine. This week, a request from the American Red Cross, not for money, but for your blood. We will first hear from Dr. W.W. Bauer, who speaks for the American Medical Association. Dr. Bauer.
60 days after the attack on Pearl Harbor, the American National Red Cross called upon the American people to invest in a new kind of bank. Doctors and nurses took the place of bankers, and the bankers were among the warm-hearted millions who gave freely of their blood. The Red Cross Blood Bank collected 13 million pints of blood, and this was unquestionably the greatest lifesaver of the war. At Tarawa, 6,000 pints of blood plasma went ashore, and 4,000 pints came back in the veins of Marines. In many instances, from 20 to 40 pints were needed to save a single life. As a result, 97% of the wounded were able to survive. Today, your Red Cross again wants you to give blood that will be distributed throughout the nation without charge to help save lives and prevent needless suffering. In order that you may understand the needs and the purposes of this national blood program, we present the dramatic story of Mike Dorsey.
If you don't know who Mike Dorsey is, you probably don't read the sports pages. Or else you find that life is much more pleasant since you gave up golf. Just the opposite with Mike. Life's been pretty cozy since he took up golf. Or at least it was until... but that's our story. You must have seen Mike's picture at some time, maybe in the newsreels. That big Irish face smiling from ear to ear as he received the trophy. There's so many of those trophies lining the mantle over the Dorsey fireplace that Mike's wife said to him the other night.
Mike, I'm getting so tired of having the fireplace cluttered up with all those golf Oscars. Let's get rid of some of that junk.
Junk, she calls it. Josie, you cut me to the quick. Hope you realize that. I sweat and slave over burning hot deserts.
Burning deserts?
Yes, sand. Burning hot sand traps. Remember the sand traps at Palm Grove?
Yes, I remember.
Thermometer 104 in the shade. Only I'm not in the shade. I'm under a blazing sun, wallowing in a sand trap, and three strokes behind.
Yes, and all I could think of was your poor caddy slogging along with all those golf clubs.
Yeah, but think of the terrific mental strain that I was under. Three strokes short of $5,000.
Mental strain. They took pictures of you smiling on the green. I have them in my scrapbook.
Oh, sure. The smile that concealed a broken heart.
Poor Pagliacci.
Now, besides, I was trying to get him nervous.
Oh, so that was it.
And I did get him nervous. He flubbed the putt, and I went on to win on the 18th green. 5,000 cabbage leaves.
Oh, well, I'm not talking about money.
Oh, no, not money, but those trophies that I gave my all to win. Just remember, there's a lot of bronze and silver and gold. If we ever have to hawk that stuff, it'll keep us in groceries for a long time.
Shall I get an estimate on it?
Estimate? What for?
Oh, just in case.
Oh, Josie, please don't be so earthy.
Oh, well, Death Valley Day, smiling through with the number 5 iron and the putter. Have it your way.
Josie?
Yeah?
I wish you'd come along for the Pinedale Open.
Oh, you know I can't. I might be called out on a case at any time.
Oh, come on. They can always get another
nurse. Oh, maybe they can, maybe they can't. Nurses are like new cars these days, and besides, we can't afford it.
Oh, you always say that. We can, too.
Well, suppose you don't place in the winning money, then what?
Well, we still have a tidy little nest egg in the bank.
Well, let's leave the egg in the nest. We might need it if we run into a little trouble.
Oh, really? Such as what?
Oh, sickness, accident, who knows?
Listen, Josie, my policies are all paid up.
I know, but... Mike, have you got your reservation?
I sure have. Roomette.
When do you leave?
Saturday night, 10:15.
Not till Saturday night, huh?
Nope.
Mike?
Yeah?
The Red Cross has started a drive for blood donors. There'll be a mobile unit out at the school gym Saturday.
Well, I thought the war was over. Who's this for, the Siamese?
No, the people in this country.
Are you hinting that I ought to go over and pipe my heart's blood into a bottle right before a tournament? Josie, what do you want me to come home with, a booby prize?
Well, the tournament isn't till a week from tomorrow.
But I need a few days to get the lay of the land.
And for a big, strapping athlete like you, a pint of blood's only a drop in the bucket.
A drop, she says. Josie, you'd think I was a horse. Besides, why should I bleed myself for some guy who's in a hospital and wants something for nothing?
Or maybe a little girl from an orphanage? Or maybe some mother who lost her only son during the war?
War? Now, listen, I was a small part of the war effort over in New Guinea.
Yes, yes, I know.
Oh, yes, she says. No, I don't get it. But some of the people who stayed home and got rich helped the needy. I'm hanging on to my blood, at least until the Pinedale Open is over.
So you wouldn't be turning selfish on me, would you?
Selfish?
Yes.
This is what comes of marrying a nurse. Now, look, Josie, I'm very fond of you, but don't spring this selfish stuff on me. It just doesn't go down.
The discussion became an argument after that, covering a wide range of topics, such as Mike's mother-in-law, Josie's ancestors, Mike's ancestors, people born in Cork, Ireland, giving up liquor for Lent, and pouring money into golf equipment. The argument had its bitter moments, so we'll spare you the details. But by Saturday night, when Mike boarded the Streamliner, they were on speaking terms again, and there were even tears in Josie's eyes when Mike kissed her goodbye. As the train thundered along in the night, Mike went into the club car and struck up an acquaintance with a doctor.
I'm not much of a golfer myself, but I knew that I'd seen your picture somewhere.
You play much golf, Dr. Peck?
I play whenever I can find the time, Mike.
I suppose that isn't very often for a man in your job.
Well, I take my clubs with me whenever I travel. I'm going to try to get in one or two games during this meeting. Dr. Gaines and Dr. Hart and Dr. Fielding are pretty fair golfers, and we usually make up a foursome.
Well, what do you shoot?
I'm a long ways from being in your class, Mike. I'm in the 80s.
Pretty good for a fellow who's a full-time surgeon. Oh, by the way, I don't think I told you that my wife's a nurse.
Oh, is that so?
Yes. Served overseas with the Army during the war.
Is she still active?
Oh, yes. I don't know why, but she seemed to get quite a kick out of it.
Well, you must have a wife with a real love for humanity. When they go on nursing, even though they don't need the money, that's the test of a top-flight nurse.
Oh, I wouldn't say that we don't need the money. I don't place in the winning money out at Pinedale. My expenses alone will be quite a setback.
Mike, from what I know of your golf, just following you in the newspapers, if you can't clean up on a lot of those has-beens who are entered, I'll be surprised.
Well, we'll see. What sort of surgery do you specialize in, Doctor?
Head and throat, mostly.
Well, are you what they call a plastic surgeon?
Not exactly. Although I've done quite a bit of plastic work. During the war, mostly. Right now, I'm principally interested in cancers of the larynx.
Oh, that's bad, isn't it?
All depends on how far it's progressed before you find it. We're getting a lot better results than we used to.
Say, Doctor, tell me something. What's all this about a Red Cross drive for blood contributions?
Well, the Red Cross has set up a national blood program that I consider to be very important.
Well, doesn't every hospital have its own blood bank these days?
No, no. Only about one out of every three hospitals have blood banks that are supplied by voluntary contribution. Even hospitals that pay cash for blood aren't getting enough for their needs. And those that have blood banks still need more than they're getting.
Well, I don't know. Seems to me that in time of need, most anybody could count on a few friends to help out.
No, it isn't quite as easy as all that, Mike. In the first place, the blood of even the closest relatives may not be of the right type.
Oh, I know that, but if they give their blood to the hospital bank, why can't the hospital provide the right kind of blood for the patient?
But you see, whole blood of any type can only be stored for 21 days.
Yeah, but there's blood plasma.
Yes, yes, an excellent substitute in an emergency. But the whole problem is much bigger than that. We've developed a whole lot of other uses for blood derivatives.
Such as what?
For certain kidney diseases, we use serum albumin. Other derivatives are used for measles, in brain and nerve surgery, for certain anemic conditions, and for what you might call bleeders, the hemophiliacs. We also use a paste and a powder made from red blood cells for the healing of a certain kind of wound.
And you think a hospital couldn't make up all this stuff, even if they were to buy the blood from people?
Definitely not. This is a job for highly trained specialists.
Well, not that I'd mind giving for a friend, but this business of giving just to anybody who happens to need it, giving them something for nothing, will...
Yes?
Well, my wife and I had a battle royal over the whole principle of the thing. I think it's all wrong.
You don't mind that I happen to be on your wife's side, Mike, huh?
No, naturally, you would be.
Mike, in times of emergency, when whole blood and blood plasma must be rushed to a community, you can't depend on the limited reserves of a local hospital. You must have a blood bank from which you can obtain the necessary supplies.
But it all goes back to the same idea that a lot of us give other people something for nothing.
Something for nothing? Well, now you don't mind giving some of your money for the general welfare, do you?
No, I pay income tax, and I contribute to the community fund, the Red Cross, and Lord knows how many other things, but when I'm asked to bleed myself, well, I just wonder.
In other words, you'd give anything for a friend, but you have your doubts about what you'd give for a person you don't even know, eh?
Well, it sizes it up pretty well.
Say, what's this? Oh, looks like they're stopping.
Up in the cab, the engineer was trying desperately to stop his train. There was an oil truck stalled in the track. The diesel engine shattered the truck. The locomotive left the track and plowed the earth while the cars piled together in a mass of wreckage. A long stream of blazing oil spread down the line of golden cars. Screams and groans were heard everywhere. Black cloud of oil smoke closed like a pall over the twisted and burning coaches. Miles from the scene of the accident, in the trim modern hospital at Melford, the chief resident, Dr. Joseph Spencer, was talking to his chief nurse, Miss Pitkin, and his intern in surgery, Dr. Sam Adler. It was 10:45 p.m., and they had arranged their schedule for the next day.
And you've got Dr. Fitch down for operating room B at 9:30?
Yes, I have.
Well, excuse me, I guess that's everything.
I've checked off my list.
Excuse me. Well, what's so funny?
The resident yawns and then his intern yawns. Sorry to keep you up this late, gentlemen.
Oh, it isn't you, Pitkin. It's the hour.
We love you madly, Pitkin.
Oh.
We worship the ground you walk on. In fact, we even worship the linoleum that daily feels the tread of your dainty feet. Don't we, Doctor?
Yes, Sam, we do. Mm-hmm. The joy of seeing Pitkin every morning is precious, a rose that gives us the courage to go on. Say, Sam, you're coming up for that tumor operation, aren't you?
Oh, yes, of course.
And by the way, did you take a smear from that boy in 309?
Yeah, I'll have the lab report for you in the morning.
You hypocrites, I hate you both.
Why, Pitkin, the very thought that I might have said something to displease you obliges me to ask your pardon on bended knee.
If I thought that I had said anything that made you unhappy, Pitkin, I would commit Harry Carey with an unsterilized butcher knife.
Which reminds me, Sam, the man in 245, the butcher...
I changed that dressing this morning. He's coming along fine.
Gentlemen, if I may be excused...
Oh, don't go just yet, dear lady.
Parting is such sweet sorrow. Let us say farewell until tomorrow.
Dr. Spencer...
I have an emergency call from a man at Orville Junction, a Mr. Williams.
Now, put him off.
One moment, please. Go ahead, Mr. Williams.
Hello? Have I still got the hospital?
Yes, this is Dr. Spencer, the doctor in charge. What's the trouble?
We had a terrible train accident just a mile north of here. Streamliner hit an oil truck. Oh, it was awful, Doctor. Don't know how many were killed. They're still getting them out of the cars. A lot of people badly burned.
Burned, you say?
Yeah, the burning oil splashed all over the train. Worst thing I ever saw.
Now, just where is this?
You know where Highway 74 crosses the tracks?
Yes.
Well, it's about a half a mile north of there.
Half a mile north?
Yes. You'll find a little dirt road that leads along the right-of-way to the west of the tracks.
Yes, I know the road.
will you get us all the doctors and nurses and medical supplies you can spare just as quick as you can?
Who is this speaking?
Don Williams, passenger traffic agent.
We'll be there as quickly as possible, Mr. Williams. Goodbye. Well, you heard what he said, didn't you?
Yes, train crash, lots of people hurt, many burned.
Well, get this now. It's a half mile north of where Highway 74 crosses the tracks, and there's a dirt road just east of the tracks.
Yes, Doctor.
Sam, get every intern on the job except Dr. Green. We'll leave him here to cover the hospital.
Okay.
Also call Dr. Harms, Dr. Dreyer, and Dr. Brown, and ask them to come in and stand by.
Will do.
I'll call Dr. Coffey, Dr. Harper, and Dr. Blanchforth, and ask them to meet us out there. Go ahead, Sam. Put the calls through at the switchboard.
I'll take care of it right now.
Now, Miss Pitkin, we're going to take four of our five ambulances. I'll handle that myself.
Yes, Doctor.
You'll take care of the medical supplies and see that they're packed and ready as quickly as possible.
What do you want that's special?
I want 5,000 cc of blood plasma.
Yes, Doctor.
And 1,000 cc of whole blood.
Well, you realize, of course, that this will take practically all we have.
Yes, have Johnson wire the Red Cross explaining the situation and asking for another 10,000 cc of blood plasma and another 2,000 cc of whole blood.
I've got it. Will do.
And we'll need plenty of M&S.
Yes, Doctor.
A lot of burn cases. Compresses, Pitkin. Plenty of those, too.
And the emergency surgical kit?
Enough of everything else to handle at least 50 patients.
I'll get right on it.
Now, about the nurses.
Yes?
We'll ask everybody who is already on duty to remain for the night.
I'll put that on the call system.
And we'll ask those who are coming in fresh to go to the accident and help out.
Two minutes after the club car came to a shuddering stop on its side in a ditch, Mike Dorsey became aware that he was still alive. There were still groans and screams all around him. His first thought was to get out of this terrible place. He found a way through a broken window. Outside, the air was fresh and cold, and a little to one side there was a light where a man bent over the figure of a woman. He soon realized that the man was his new friend, Dr. Peck. The doctor looked up and said,
"Oh, hello, Mike. Lucky I brought a pocket flashlight, isn't it?"
"Yes, very thoughtful."
"Well, there isn't much I can do for this woman. She's dead. Hey, how'd you make out?"
"I don't know."
"Mike, you're bleeding quite a bit around the face. And I don't like the look of this arm at all. Here, lie down a moment."
Yes, I guess I better before I fall down."
"There. I'm going to put a tourniquet on this arm for a while. Just hold still and we'll fix this up temporarily. The rest we can take care of later."
"Where are you? Please help."
"There, Mike. I think this will hold you for a while now. Now I'm going over and see what I can do for her."
"How did you manage to get by without being mussed up?"
"I don't know, Mike. Maybe it's because somebody decided I might have a lot to do around here tonight. Oh, I wish this flashlight gave a little more light. See you later, Mike."
It was much later before Dr. Peck saw Mike again. With the aid of his pocket flashlight, he stumbled around amid the dead and dying, but more often among dazed and injured persons who needed what he did not have, medical supplies, and above all, blood plasma. Suddenly he heard a sound that sent a thrill to his heart. It was a long, high wail of ambulance sirens. Four ambulances came roaring out of the darkness. Now there was light everywhere. Doctors and nurses came pouring out of the ambulances, and he knew at once that he had all the help he needed. A few minutes later, he was discussing the situation with Dr. Spencer.
"Oh, yes, Dr. Myron Peck, the surgeon. I've heard of you, of course. I'm Dr. Spencer, the chief resident at Melford."
"Oh, how do you do?" "Well, I'd like M&S for about a dozen people here, and four should have blood plasma immediately."
"Show us where they are, and we'll go right to work."
"Well, that'll be easy now that you've got your headlights spotted on us. And your doctor was pretty rough there for a while, stumbling around in the darkness with pocket flashlight and picking out everybody by their groans. Well, Doctor, let's go to work."
It was after midnight when Mike Dorsey awakened to find himself in an ambulance on his way to the Melford Hospital. Now he felt terribly weak, and there were pains in his head, and a deep pain that ran along his arm. Every time the ambulance jolted, he found that he couldn't keep from groaning.
"Oh,
There. Take it easy, Mike. We'll be at the hospital in a couple of minutes, and then I'll give you a shot that will take the pain away.
Oh. Well, Dr. Peck?
Yes, I'm sticking with you, Mike. There's strangers around here. I don't know a soul except the chief resident and a couple of nurses, and I've just met them. Hang on, and the worst will probably be over by morning.
Four surgeons worked all night in the operating rooms, and two were busy in the emergency ward, including Dr. Peck, who soon felt very much at home. The next afternoon, Josie arrived, and she was soon in very earnest conversation with Dr. Peck.
When I think how fortunate Mike was to have a surgeon right with him when this happened, I...
Mrs. Dorsey, any doctor, or for that matter, any person with an elementary knowledge of first aid could have applied a tourniquet. All I did was to stop the bleeding.
Oh, but you were there to give him blood plasma.
Yes, but by that time, the blood plasma was more important than whoever happened to be on hand to give it.
How's he now?
Well, I don't think that we need worry too much about the outcome. Unless there are conditions that we haven't been able to locate, he certainly should come through all right.
But you say he has a compound fracture of the arm with arterial hemorrhage and deep laceration to the face.
Yes, but it could have been much more serious than it appears to be.
Oh, yes, of course, Doctor.
We've already given him a quart of blood plasma. We're giving him another pint, at least, of whole blood.
Dr. Peck, I don't know any of these other surgeons, and Mike's so sold on you. Will you take care of everything for us?
No. We've got a bone man here who is miles ahead of me at reducing fractures. He'll take care of Mike's arm much better than I could.
But the facial injuries you...
Well, if you and Mike wish, I'm sure that the chief surgeon, Dr. Hart, won't object. We've known one another a long time.
Oh, I do hope we can work it out that way.
We'll see. But I can't promise you that I can bring back that million-dollar smile, Mrs. Dorsey. There will, of course, be some scars.
Oh, Dr. Peck, you've done so much for him already, but won't you please stay here in Milford and do the rest? We'll be eternally grateful to you.
Mrs. Dorsey, there are two things I can't seem to resist. Your husband's smile and a request from a nurse who is really top grade.
Two weeks later, Dr. Peck had completed his operation and departed. Mike's arm was in a cast, but Mike was sitting up these days and complaining that he wasn't getting enough to eat. It was about this time that he and Josie had a little conversation that almost led to another pitched battle.
I was just talking to Dr. Spencer.
Oh, yes, the chief resident.
Mm.
See him quite often. Nice fellow. Hates golf. Fiend for tennis.
Mm?
Oh, he thinks golf's an old man's game.
Did you say that?
No, but that's what he thinks. Oh, these tennis players, all alike.
You know, he was telling me that the Red Cross has given the hospital 20,000 cc's of blood plasma and 4,000 cc's of whole blood for the accident victims.
Mm-hmm, including me.
Of course, including you. You got plenty.
Oh, there you go with that old I told you so stuff. Why don't you lay off?
What are you talking about?
Oh, you know just as well as I do, Mrs. Foxy.
Now, I'm really not trying to start an argument. I'm merely telling you that...
Oh, sure. Now you've got statistics on your side, so you can really hammer away at me. Suppose I'll never hear the last of this.
Now, Mike, don't start something you can't finish with one arm in a cast.
Go ahead. Take advantage of my condition. You've probably been wanting to clout me for a long time.
No, but I would like to pound a little sense into your head once in a while.
All right, so somebody has given me a couple of quarts of blood. Somebody I don't even know. And I got it free of charge. And without it... Oh, well, anyhow, I owe a couple of quarts to the Red Cross Blood Bank. Now, have I said enough, or do you want me to crawl on my hands and knees to the Red Cross and beg them to bleed me?
Oh, Mike, you're so sweet when you concede defeat.
That's only the smile that comes from a broken heart.
Poor Pagliacci.
We take you now to station WAVE, Louisville, Kentucky, for a talk by Mr. Basil O'Connor, President of the American National Red Cross, Mr. O'Connor.
Need for a constantly available supply of blood to treat victims of disaster. On an average of every day and a half during 1947, the Red Cross was called upon to aid victims of tornadoes, floods, fires, wrecks, and explosions. In many of these disasters, Red Cross supplied blood and plasma. We were able to do this because of the generosity of the American people from whose veins the blood was drawn. Spectacular disasters draw public attention to the need for blood in salvaging the injured, but the day-by-day need for blood in healing the sick is equally important to the welfare of our people. A nation is strong only as its people are strong. People are strong only when they are well. The medical profession works unceasingly to build the nation's health. Every doctor, from the one who travels the lonely back roads in the country to the highly trained specialist in the great medical centers, has one concern: to save human lives and improve the people's health. To do this, doctors must have tools. And one of these tools is human blood. Medical authorities say that 3,700,000 pints of blood will be required each year to meet the growing needs of blood therapy. This blood must come from the veins of healthy, generous people. It cannot be manufactured. To meet the urgent and growing need for blood, the American Red Cross launched the National Blood Program. At every step of the planning and development of the program, we have drawn on the counsel and guidance of the country's leading physicians, and we shall continue to do so. Without the cooperative spirit which medical leaders have so magnificently demonstrated, our program cannot succeed, and succeed it must. We must not let people die for want of blood. Millions live today on borrowed blood, blood given by generous neighbors and fellow citizens. And it's for all our people, patients in our civilian and veterans hospitals, patients in hospitals caring for the armed forces, that we must provide the blood vital to their healing. Hospital blood banks have done a tremendous job in supplying blood to patients, but the need has grown far beyond the capacity of private blood banks. They must have the reinforcements which the National Blood Program can give them. Red Cross blood centers are established only after consultation with local medical and hospital authorities. The centers work in close cooperation with the local medical society. They operate under strict medical supervision. Hand in hand with the great body of men who constitute the medical profession, the Red Cross National Blood Program will undertake to furnish blood to every person needing it. Blood is given by voluntary donors. It's supplied to hospitals and doctors without cost. The program is your program. You have a stake in it. And we depend upon you to help us meet this need.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor.
Doctors Today is presented by the American Medical Association and the National Broadcasting Company through the facilities of NBC and its independent affiliated stations. We present this program on behalf of the thousands of physicians who are working night and day to protect and preserve the lives of 141 million Americans. The American Medical Association invites you to join us again next week to hear another report on the progress of medicine and surgery in America. Doctors Today, written by William J. Murphy, comes to you through the facilities of the National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations associated with the NBC network. The orchestra is under the direction of Bernard Berquist, with original music composed by Emil Soderstrom. The entire production is under the direction of Norman Felton. Heard in today's cast were Donald Gallagher, Muriel Bremner, Boris Applin, Jack Lester, George Kluge, Sunda Love, and Fred Smith. Bob McKee was heard as the narrator. Your announcer is Henry Cook. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.